Welcome to the 6 a.m. Run Podcast. My name is Mark Paysant. I'm an avid runner, a certified personal trainer, a 6 a.m. run ambassador, and host of the show. Be sure to head over to the website, 6amrun.com, to sign up today to get 20% off of your first order. Now, let's start the show. Hello, welcome back to another episode of the 6 a.m. Run Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Paysant. Always a pleasure to have you being a part of the show. As always, this show is brought to you by 6 a.m. Run and 6amrun.com. Head over to that website to sign up to get 20% off of your first order. So we have a great guest for you today, and I'm going to start off by just saying thank you so much for her patience in my technical difficulties this morning. But I have another morning recording, which I love. She's only the second person, like the last 6 months, to grab this early slot. But we have Dr. Rebecca Jackson. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself for our audience?
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark. I'm Dr. Rebecca Jackson, as you mentioned. Please call me Rebecca. I am a morning runner, which is why I loved grabbing the morning slot. I feel like a fraud. I'm a 7 a.m. runner, not a 6 a.m. runner. Although today I did get up earlier, so I had my husband drive my son to school so I could fit it all in before the day got started. But who I am as a person and professionally, I've always described myself as I'm active, not athletic. If you threw a ball at me, I would duck and cover, but I love to be outside with my kids and husband and dogs. And then professionally, what I'm passionate about is brain health and well-being. I love knowing and understanding as much as I can about the brain and knowing what can we do as individuals, whether adults or parents, to optimize how we feel and function to get the most out of our lives.
I will not call you a fraud if you're running at 7 a.m. Like, I will not do that. I didn't get today as my day off from working out. So I did not get my run in today. But I am happy with myself because I've been nursing a knee injury and I've just now started to get back into running. And the last 2 weeks have been great. So, but enough about, you know, the extremities. Let's talk about the brain a little bit, because I feel like this is the part of the body, or one of the parts of the body, that people, I don't want to say forget about, because that, I mean, it's hard to forget about the part that helps you with memory, but it's the part that people don't really work on as much as they should or can. So why is it that us being intentional about our brain health, why is that so important?
Our brain health is everything. It is our mental health. It is our cognition. How our brain takes in, processes, and reacts to information dictates everything in life. So if my brain isn't taking in information accurately, efficiently, consistently, we can have higher rates of anxiety. We can have a hard time learning, whether it's at work or in the classroom. It changes and affects our mood and emotions, our productivity. And so what I love about this moment in time right now is we are at a different level of awareness and conversation. We are talking about mental health and brain health in a different way than we have previously. And I equate this time to what the 80s were to heart health. The 1980s was all about heart health, and that wave of information brought it to the mainstream, where we started to know and understand the importance of how what we eat impacts our overall health, the importance of exercise. And our focus right now, you're seeing brain health enter the conversation, to me, in a way that heart health did in the 80s. And I'm so hopeful for that, to help people understand that we're born with a brain, and then our early development impacts how we perform as adults. And so if we've got gaps and holes in development, It impacts our ability to sustain attention, to control inhibitory control and impulse control. So we're born with a brain, but then life and experiences form and evolve that brain over time. But then we have the ability to step in and change it. You don't need to feel stuck, but knowing what you can do to strengthen and exercise the brain has a huge impact on mood, emotions, productivity, and everything we want in life.
And that's great. And you just mentioned it. You said, you know, strengthen, actually work on, do a workout for the brain. You know, of course, our kids, they go to school and they're learning. You know, we talk about neuroplasticity all the time with kids and how they actually retain stuff and learn and become, you know, from little humans to adults. But as an adult, we get into our, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s. How do we continue that process of growing our brain and making sure it stays strong?
The first thing to know is the brain can change at any age. So even though we're no longer teenagers, our brain can still be improving. So just like our body, right? We can get stronger, faster, more efficient. It's the same with the brain. We strengthen what we utilize. And so, you know, if you're going to spend all of your downtime laying on the couch, binge watching shows while scrolling through TikTok, we're not going to strengthen the things that help us sustain attention, block out distractions, regulate mood and emotions. But what's fascinating to me about the brain is it's not about practicing what you're deficient in. So let's say, for example, let's say, Mark, you struggle with attention. You've been practicing paying attention your entire life. If practicing attention was going to get you there, you wouldn't need to do better at it, right? So it's taking a step back to say, what are all the things that contribute to our ability to pay attention? And then how do we exercise and strengthen that? So for example, sensory input is such a fascinating area to me, but our senses dictate our attention. And so if you are over-perceiving sensory input, you know, the seam in your sock or the loud noise, the dog barking in the next room so you can't concentrate on the conversation, our senses dictate how we're able to direct and filter out our attention and information. And so it's about being intentional of, are you getting a variety of sensory input? So for example, if you're at home, I work from home, or think back to the pandemic, if we're only at home all day, every day, we're experiencing the same sensory input all the time. My dogs sound the same barking every day. I cook the same foods, light the same candles, so my house smells the same every day. My view out the window, other than, you know, clouds versus sun, is similar. But if I'm intentional about making sure that I am barefoot and go outside, whether I'm going from the grass to the concrete to then inside my house to the hardwood floors and rugs, if I'm going to an Asian market and, you know, I'm smelling all the different smells of foods that I don't eat on a daily basis, providing a variety of new and different experiences to the brain is powerful, because then you're exercising and engaging different pathways. So the senses is just one example of a way that we can intentionally strengthen and exercise parts of the brain.
And I know when you talked about, you know, lounging around and watching reels of TikTok, you were definitely not talking about me.
Generally
people. That's what we were talking about, which I appreciate that very much. Would you say, like, and I know that you've done a lot of research on this, you've even written a book, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Like, is going outside and going for a run, is that enough of, or is that a start to help with brain health? Or are there things that we need to do? Just like if someone wants to, like, increase their stamina, there's many different ways to do it. If somebody wants to, like, work on their core, there's many different exercises or way to do it. Like, is there something specifically that a person needs to do, or they can just use the things that they're doing in a day to help with their brain health? And I hope I asked that correctly. I know what I wanted to say in my brain, but I hope it came out correctly.
I think I got the gist of it. And I'm going to say both and. Mm-hmm. Both can be true. So, you know, let's start with talking about the power and importance of a run. So one of the things that I talk about in my book is the level of alertness of our brain. So there is a reason why when we go to sleep at night, we stop processing information. the sensory input in your environment doesn't go away. You still have the weight of the blankets, the sound of the dog barking outside, the smell of your bedroom. All of that information is still there. But when we stop using our core muscles, there's a part of our brain that it signals, and I picture it to be like closing a gate or a garage door, is when we stop engaging core muscles, that gate closes, signaling to our brain, you no longer need to be taking in that sensory input to orient yourself in the world. Then when your alarm goes off first thing in the morning, the first thing that we all do naturally is we stretch. Stretching starts to fire and engage the muscles. When we use and engage our muscles, and especially our core muscles, it signals to the brain to open that gate to be more alert. And so to start taking in the sensory information. And so I love, you know, the old adage in the classroom of sit up to pay attention. That's true neurologically. When we engage our core muscles, it's signaling to your brain to be more alert. So that's my first entrance into why I love a morning run, is getting up and engaging the muscles, elevating the heart rate, is waking up my brain for the day, telling my brain, turn on, be awake, be alert, start taking in information. Then there's the power of what exercise does for us on so many different levels. Well, there we're talking about mitochondria health, which is going to be the energy production in our systems. When we fire muscles, it releases hormones. So exercise in general, from so many different perspectives, boosts our attention, our memory. It helps us regulate our mood and emotions. And then my final favorite part of going for a run is what it does for our thought processes and memories. And as much as I'm a fan of podcasts, I actually think it's great to give yourself time at some point during your day. So for me, it's while I run, where I'm not listening to a podcast. It's the only time in my day where I'm not mentally engaged in something. And so if you notice what your thoughts do during that time, they bounce all around. You're going to think about the one random memory from childhood that popped up. You're going to worry about the meeting that you have later in the day. You're going to think through, oh my gosh, how are we going to fit everything in this weekend with 5 hockey games and a track meet? That's how we process our emotions. It's where we brainstorm. It's where creativity comes into play. So giving your mind, I call it free range thinking time, that time to just roam and explore and process, is also really powerful. So going for a run is so good on so many different levels.
That makes so much sense, because I'll be honest with you, like the last few months, I've noticed the best sleep I've gotten is those moments I've laid down and I've thought of the most random things, and then I'm gone. And then the next morning I woke up and I'm like, why was I thinking about my third grade teacher? And I really was wondering, like, I don't have these thoughts any other time during the day. And that makes sense, because there's some type of sensory overload or some type of sensory input throughout my day, whether I'm working at the computer, listening to music, going for a run, things like that. So I'm very glad I spoke to you this morning. That makes plenty of sense.
Good. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
I was going to say, I only answered one half of that, even though that answer was really long.
You answered enough of it. And I hope that you all find something in life that just brings as much excitement. Like listening to and watching, you know, Rebecca talk about this, I can tell like how excited you get about brain health and talking about it. So I hope we all can find something like that. So let's talk about really quickly the book, because if anybody, they're going to be like, Mark, we understand. Anybody listens to this show, like, I am enamored with authors. Just the fact of like putting this all together, sending it to an editor, a publisher, doing the edits, like all that, like, I think authors are amazing. But it's called Back on Track, and I will have the link to it in the show notes. It's a practical guide to help kids of all ages thrive. And I think she's talking about me, because I am a big kid. Don't let the age fool you. I am 13 up top. So, but talk about why write the book. What was the genesis of it? Why put this out there, and why spend so much time to get this out there? What can people get from the book?
Yeah, you know, the genesis of the book really came during the pandemic. So my daytime job, I'm chief program officer for a company called Brain Balance. We deliver programs that help kids and adults strengthen and improve the brain. So I've been in this space for 15 years. So I, on the daily basis, see the power of when you exercise the brain and body together, what that can do to improve attention, focus, productivity, and more. So that's my background and experience. And I've published research in improving cognition, well-being, and then the pandemic hit. And the escalation of concerns just went through the roof. And so friends from all over the country were calling with concerns about their kids. I was doing a lot of media at that time, and everything was so negative. Increase in rates of ADHD, medication shortage because so many more people were taking medication for ADHD, upping their dosage, new people taking medication. So then there was an Adderall shortage. We were seeing larger academic achievement gaps. So gapping out in our kids' learning with a disproportionate impact socioeconomically. The news and the headlines were so negative. And I kept sitting back waiting for the hope in the action plan, and it wasn't coming. So in the meantime, I was writing about this topic over and over. I was answering questions. The number of parents and adults calling Brain Balance asking for help and struggling went through the roof. And I got tired of waiting and finally thought, okay, I don't feel like I have all of the answers, but I do have some knowledge and experience. And so I wanted to engage in a conversation on a larger level to help people understand why increased sustained stress and massive change in how we functioned created bigger problems with ADHD, attention, anxiety, depression, learning. And I always want to empower people to understand, why am I feeling and functioning the way I am, and what can I do to improve it? How can I empower you to do things in your daily lives that can have a positive impact both right now and in the long term, and then really empowering parents to help their kids. The next book that's inevitably going to be a part two is the book for adults. I always tell people, read the sections for teenagers because it applies to all of our brains. So the genesis of the book came from a need, hope. You know, there's nothing that weighs on you more when you yourself are struggling or you're watching your child struggle and feeling stuck, feeling like the traditional options haven't been enough, or you're maybe not comfortable going down that path. So knowing that the brain can change and what you can do to support that.
Well, I will say thank you for that. And it's always, I always have to remind myself of the world we live in. Like we all went through a pandemic. Like that's something that has to be, that has to be brought up when we talk about our history. And, you know, my kids were really little when that happened, probably 7 and 5 or 6 and something like that. And, you know, their memory, I don't want to move time forward at all, but I'm looking forward to like talking to them when they're adults and asking them what they remember about that time in their life. Because, you know, when I was really young, you know, we had the Challenger explosion, and it didn't resonate with me the way it did with my mother, or with my dad. And it's always interesting to see how their brains, because from them, they got to like, be home a lot and play outside a lot. And they had to talk to their friends across the street. And, you know, I'm just interested to see what that was. But again, thank you for writing the book. And you bring up I think the one word that everyone kind of asks a lot, and it's why. It's why. And is the brain, like, is it the place where, like, that question is answered, where the why is answered, or is it just a processing plant? Because if we really, let's be honest, if we really tried to find the answer to why on everything, we'd be here. This would be a 24-hour podcast, and we'd do it again tomorrow. But is the brain just a simple machine that takes in information and disperses as needed and makes quick, you know, synapses and things like that? Or is there a lot of stuff we don't know about the brain yet?
So much. And I'll tell you, the more I learn, the more I feel like I know nothing when it comes to the brain. And so I always say, I always want to surround myself with people far smarter than I am, so I continue to learn and grow and evolve. Here's what we do know is the brain is so complex. And when we talk about brain health, here's the things that we know. We know sleep has a massive impact on our mood and cognition. Cambridge Brain Sciences did a really fascinating study that was such an eye-opener for me. What they looked at is just a small amount of sleep deprivation has the impact on our cognition equivalent to being intoxicated. And I remember feeling this as a new parent. I had a 5-month-old baby that wasn't sleeping well at all. And I remember saying to my husband the next day, I feel like I shouldn't even drive a car today. I'm just exhausted and I feel like I'm just not sharp. I didn't feel safe. And so then reading that study, I was like, well, it was true. So cognitively, sleep deprivation slows us down. And it's, you know, when we think about, I talk a lot about attention and our executive functions, which is our ability to plan, to have goal-oriented actions and behaviors to achieve what we want to achieve, whether it's, you know, short-term throughout our day or long-term, write and publish a book. But our attention and executive functions are fragile, fragile resources. They're some of the last things to come together developmentally and the first things to degrade with aging, pathology, stress, fatigue. And so making sure that we get adequate sleep is going to help to support being able to take advantage of the resources that you have. So if you have optimal cognition and executive functions, but you're tired, you don't have optimal cognition and executive functions in that moment. So sleep is important. Nutrition is important. What we put in our body is what fuels our brain to function. So if we're doing tons of processed foods, tons of added sugars, there's an impact on our brain. We're going to drive up inflammation. Inflammation is going to make things groggier and foggier in the brain. And so the importance of what we eat impacts our brain on a daily basis. Then exercise. So, you know, firing and exercising those pathways isn't just about cardio health and physical fitness. It has an impact on the brain as well. And so those are three simple things that we know have a direct impact on our brain.
Okay, people are really going to start to not like me on the show because I say it all the time. Like, I could have someone on here who's talking about brain health, physical fitness, mental health, any type of health. Like, everyone always says the same thing. It comes back to three main things. It's what we do with our body, what we put in our body, and how we rest our body. Like, it is just, it's amazing. Like, I am amazed that everybody knows, I do not ask any of the guests any questions beforehand. I don't tell them what we're going to talk about. It is an organic conversation. And I want people to understand, like, I know this is happening because I'm one of those people. I eat well. I'll tell you right now, I'm high protein and a lot of vegetables, you know, but I don't eat fast food. I don't drink. I work out as much as I can. I do not get enough sleep. I will come on this show and say it. And last night I actually did. Last night I did. And I can tell you right now, I actually feel sharper than I do most days. Like, it takes me a long time to get going because, you know, I do the two shows. I have a full-time job. I coach. I have two girls that want to do, one wants to do sports, one wants to do slime. You know, I'm not making excuses. I'm just telling you what my day is like. And then the only time I really get to work out or run is first thing in the morning. So I drag myself out of bed to get to the gym or go for a run, but it really takes me a long time to get going. So I want people to understand, like, people aren't just saying what they're saying to say it. Like, sleep is very, very important. And we've had a few people talk about sleep on here, but can you kind of go through what the brain is doing from that moment you start, you get ready and you fall asleep to the moment you're waking up? Like, what is the brain doing in that time?
Yeah. Well, and for, I want to say, so to me, it is back to the basics that, like we said, those three things are so key, but it's also easier said than done, right? Not everybody is able to fall asleep. I'm a woman in my late 40s. things change. I used to be an amazing sleeper and I've gotten things figured out. So I'm sleeping great again. And so, you know, I don't want to minimize something if somebody is struggling with sleep and hasn't figured that out, because that takes such a toll. And if you are a great sleeper, it's a gift. Appreciate it. And if you're not, you know, in figuring those things out are key. But when it comes to sleep, sleep is when regeneration happens. It's so there are processes happening during sleep. And I go into more detail in this in parts of the book. But it's when our brain is cleaning and organizing. And so there are these processes happening that help to minimize inflammation, help to remove waste. It's when we consolidate memories. So as we're sleeping, our brain is reviewing activities and events and information that came in throughout the day, and then it's reorganizing. So that consolidation process is the brain deciding, what am I going to keep? What am I going to throw out? And so sleep impacts our memory. It impacts our mood and emotions. It impacts our attention, and it impacts our overall brain health. So if we're not getting adequate sleep, we're going to have degradation of memory, both short-term and long-term. We're going to be more emotionally reactive, not just because you're exhausted, but also because your brain didn't go through those consolidation processes. So, you know, in a couple, I'm not a sleep expert, but from the brain perspective, a couple things that can be helpful. I know everybody talks about no screen time in the hour before bed, for sure. If you're really engaging your thoughts mentally, and, you know, we talked about the scrolling TikTok, one of the things that I want to point out is when the brain is engaged in something like TikTok, where or YouTube or gaming, where there's constant rewards happening. So you're in this hyper-focused state with like bing, 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 bing. Or for me, you know, YouTube, show me a funny dog video and I'm like hooked and I'll look for the next one and the next one. Our brain loses sense of time. When we're in a heightened state of focus, we check out of time, which is why you're like, oh, let me just check this quick. And you look up and it's an hour later. And now I stayed up till 11:30, not 10:30. How did that happen? So being mindful of what we're doing before bed. Another great trick is first thing when you wake up in the morning, taking 3 to 5 minutes to spike your heart rate. And so we know blue light first thing in the morning, natural sunlight. We know that's so good for the brain. But a trick and tip that I don't hear talked about as often is that, and it's the hardest thing to do, is within a couple minutes of waking. It's not a couple minutes after getting out of bed. It's a couple minutes from when your brain wakes up. So it's a matter of, you know, keeping the jump rope and tennis shoes right next to the bed and apologizing to your spouse, but you know, but that burst of spiking the heart rate and engaging the muscles first thing when you wake up can help to reset your brain, to tell your brain, okay, this is my go time, which is going to help then that cycle of when it's time to fall asleep. So if you're a person that has a hard time falling asleep and staying asleep, 2 weeks of that first thing in the morning, 3 to 5 minutes of spiking the heart rate can help to reset those mechanisms for sleep.
And again, Rebecca is definitely not talking about me when we talk about looking through YouTube videos late at night. You're definitely, and then wondering, how did I get to 11:30? Like what? It was just 10 o'clock. It was just 10 o'clock. But again, this is, I'm guessing that's what happens. Not talking about
No judgment. we all do it, which is why we know about it.
I know about it because you're talking about it. I have no idea, which I know. it's funny. It's not funny. It's understandable that people don't really, I'll be honest with you. I want to tell you this because I'm not blaming the school system, but we know how, you know, the best way we know to like what to eat. We know that we need to work out. We understand, oh, we hear, you know, 8 hours a day. We hear that all the time, kids. But I'll tell you, in school, like, I don't think people really understood, like, why sleep was so important to the brain and, you know, what sugar does to the brain or what XYZ does to the brain. Like, we all understand, a lot of us understand, like, why we need protein to build muscles, why we need calcium to, and we'll hear something like, oh, eat your carrots for good eyesight, or, you know, we need this for good brain. And it's like, I believe we need to go further. And that's why, you know, I know your book comes into play so parents can learn about helping their kids with brain function and all that stuff. But the last thing I want to ask you before I kind of let you plug some things is, you mentioned COVID times and you mentioned the effect that had on people. Like, I would love people to understand from a doctor, from someone who does this for a living, what are the effects of constant stress on the brain? Because we have people that are anxious all the time. We have people who stress about money, about bills. And we understand, like, the world is a tough place. But for people who don't find that outlet, don't find coping mechanisms, what does constant stress do to the brain?
Yeah. You know, the pandemic, to me, in so many ways, was like this petri dish of, we're going to be learning and unpacking this for decades to come, what the impact was. And, you know, there were a couple things that to me really became evident. I felt like the pandemic was pouring gasoline on a fire. We already had way too many adults and kids struggling with anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, learning struggles, attention, you know, on and on and on. And then we had this time of prolonged stress and change, and it all just heightened. And we, even though we've shifted back to functioning much in the way we did pre-pandemic time, there has still been a toll on the development of our kids, on how our brains are functioning now. And so to me, it was such a powerful lesson in showing the impact of stress. So what happens is the brain loves a little bit of stress, but a lot of stress shuts us down. So if you think about yourself and procrastinating, there is some benefit in a little bit of procrastinating. So let's say I've got an article to write and I know I need to write it and I just can't get myself to sit down and focus. And then it's like, you know, the deadline's tomorrow and I really need to dig in. That little bit of stress that helps us to really dial in our focus to knock something out. It gives us almost like a little boost of adrenaline to get it done. But there's a fine line, because then when that stress, think of it like a teeter-totter, when that stress heightens too much, stress burns a lot of fuel in our brain and body, and our brain needs fuel and resources to function. So when stress becomes too much, now I have a harder time paying attention, a harder time regulating my mood and emotions. And think about yourself, you know, parent of two girls, you're juggling a lot. Is when you're well-rested, you've exercised, you've eaten well, you've got your stress under control and your girls are driving you bonkers and there's a lot going on, you handle it, no problem, you roll with it. If you are exhausted, if you are really, really stressed, that's when we're going to be more likely to snap, to lose our cool, to react in a way that isn't ideal. And so we have to understand the toll that stress takes on us. And anxiety is similar, it's slightly different, but it also has that same toll. Anxiety and stress chips away at our ability to pay attention, to regulate our mood and emotions. There's a cost, which means if I need to get something done, it's harder. It doesn't mean it's not possible, but it means I've got to work harder to be able to sit down at the computer and focus and not ruminate on the thoughts that are just running through my head of what I'm worried about or what I'm trying to problem solve for. So the pandemic time was a time where everybody experienced such high levels of stress that sustained, and we saw the longer it sustained, the more we saw escalation and challenges with attention, emotional regulation, executive functions. And there is so much in our world that we can't control. And that's where I come back to, I want to empower people with the knowledge and tools of what can you do within your world for your kids, for yourselves, to be able to control what you can control. And so ensuring that what can you do to manage your stress is, and one of the things for me, myself, has been self-awareness. Is when I find myself in the morning and I'm more irritable with getting my kids out the door, it's stopping and taking a scan of myself. Why am I losing my temper right now? Am I stressed? Am I exhausted? Am I overwhelmed? And then what can I do to influence that? I can't change the scenario at work, but maybe I can do a to-do list to say, here's the one thing that I need to get done that's going to reduce that. If it's, you know, I'm exhausted, what can I do to make sure that that night I get some good sleep? And the power of movement. If I'm exhausted, I don't have time to take a nap and I'm not sleeping well, where can I put exercise and movement in throughout my day? Because when we exercise, remember that gating system, it's going to tell our brain to be more awake, more alert. I can leverage exercise to help me manage my mood and emotions and pay attention. And so I can do, you know, I might, if I'm stuck at work, I might get up and do some squat jumps or, you know, go do some stair sprints or some burpees. And then I try to empower my kids with that knowledge. As we say all the time, we use our muscles to turn on our brain. And so if we're about to sit down and they're older, so they do homework independently, but, you know, if you're exhausted sitting down to study for your AP Gov test, that's not the time to do it. You need to go, you need to study right after track practice or go take a walk and then sit down so that your brain is more alert and focused to get more out of that time. So the pandemic to me really highlighted the toll stress takes on our lives to make me really look at what can we do to control and influence that, because stress is going to happen. We can't make it go away, but how do we live with it more productively?
I'll be honest with you, that may have been the best answer to that question. It's very understandable. It people can understand that, oh, stress is using a bunch. It's like the afterburner's on all the time, yeah. And you're in a jet, and yeah. you need that fuel for other things. So I really appreciate that. So how can people find out more about you? How can they find the book? How do they learn more about you online?
You can find me LinkedIn or Instagram is at drrebeccajackson.com. Brain Balance is brainbalance.com. Starting with an assessment is whether you're a child or an adult, gives you information to see, are there gaps that are making things harder for you than what they need to be? And I always say the book is never a replacement for a full comprehensive program. And Brain Balance, we do programs on site. We've got locations all across the country. We also have an at-home virtual program. So we work with individuals, kids, and adults around the world. But brainbalance.com, you can find out more information about the assessment, about the program. And then Back on Track, you can get on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere you buy books. To empower you to understand what does healthy development look like in kids from birth through the teenage years, beyond just motor development, also what does learning look like? What is emotional regulation? What does anxiety and stress management look like? And then to help you identify, when should I worry? And then what you can do to support that both in the short term and then in long term over time for kids.
That is awesome. Thank you very much. As I say all the time, you can stop the show right now and head over to the show notes to get those links, including the book. And if you go over to my IG, hosted_by_Mark, you will see the book club and we will have a link to the book there. Dr. Rebecca Jackson, or Rebecca as she likes to be called, thank you so much for making time for us today. I look forward to a next conversation we have because I think there's just so much to talk about in regard to brain health, but I don't want to overload people's brains right now.
Agreed.
So you have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you, as always, for listening to the 6 a.m. Run podcast. Again, I am your host, Mark Paysant. Please like and subscribe to the show so you don't miss any of this amazing content. If you can, we would love if you left us a review. Remember to follow us online and use hashtag 6AMRun to connect with the greatest group of runners and fitness enthusiasts in the world.